It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
Trump fires Comey. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. This week, the nation was shaken by President Donald Trump's decision to fire FBI Director James Comey. It began with a letter sent to FBI headquarters catching Comey off guard. A rollout of explanations came from the White House, central to which was the former FBI director's testimony involving his decisions in the investigation of Hillary Clinton's email scandal last year. But then last night, an interview with NBC, the president indicated that in making his decision to fire Comey, he also weighed the investigation into Russian ties to his campaign. There were calls from Democrats for a special prosecutor and fears there might be some interference with the Russian probe. Yesterday, the acting FBI director, Andrew McCabe, reassured senators there would be no such interference and that the FBI would proceed with the investigation. Meanwhile, a Senate panel and federal grand jury have issued subpoenas involving former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. As for the Republican response on the Hill, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said there was no need for a special prosecutor or independent panel, while other GOP congressional members expressed their concern over the president's actions. To take a look at this evolving issue that's now rolled out here this week, we have Sean Bradley. He's president of the Wicomico County Republican Central Committee. Michelle Bradley with the Greater Wicomico Women Republican Club. Also, our guests include Mike Pretel. He's with the Democratic Club here in Wicomico County, and Salisbury University political science professor Michael Laughlin. And so welcome to you all.
Good morning.
So Sean, I'm gonna turn to you as our Republican here, and what's your reaction to all the events that have unfolded surrounding the Comey firing?
First of all, I need to correct. I'm the president of the Wicomico Republican Club, not the Central
Club. Okay.
I think that I think immediately, as far as what he's decided to do, there needs to be an immediate replacement that can make both sides willing to work together. Like I was reading with the National Review, Merrick Garland, for example, a moderate Democrat, but the investigation must continue because if not, it'll come off like when Nixon let Archibald Cox go and maybe in a ways to get rid of whatever pressure he was faced with Watergate. Like this can't happen, especially not in this era. I think that Comey has been attacked by both sides relentlessly, on the sides of the Clinton's campaign, saying if he had not waited to 2 or 3 weeks before the election, she may have won, and on this side, Trump's administration may be saying I'm sick and tired of the Russian allegations. But I think the error that he's making is that it's not going to go away, especially with the media the way it is today. It needs to continue to its fruition. And I think the only way to get past this mess is to hire someone, a strong FBI director who is not necessarily more of a moderate, versus if they bring in a strong conservative, again, it's going to add more fire to the other side.
Mike Pretel, what does things look like from the Democratic side?
Well, I think I agree with just about everything that Sean has said, except that I would probably add to it that merely hiring an FBI director, as he suggested, would not solve the problem, because you still need to have someone to prosecute any wrongdoing that is found, and you need a special prosecutor. But my own feeling is, as a Democrat who has followed the matter rather closely in the last weeks and months, and as an attorney, I thought the interview with Lester Holt yesterday evening was absolutely incredible. I mean, it's incredible that he would say some of the things he said. It was incredible that he was permitted to go on a camera and admit some of those things. I mean, for the last 2 days, all of his surrogates, from the vice president down to Spicer and Conway and Sanders, they've all adhered to this line that the reason for the firing was the report that Mr. Rosenstein had submitted with respect to the emails, the Hillary Clinton emails from last summer. And the president went on air and pretty much contradicted that. He said, oh, no, I made up my decision before I even talked to Mr. Rosenstein and Mr. Sessions, and that I was going to fire him all along. And, it was incredible that he permitted those talking points to be put out there and then went and completely contradicted him. And it was even more incredible that he, in his own words, linked the firing of Comey to the Russian investigation, which I think is, which all of them had denied vehemently that it had anything to do with the Russian investigation. And he said, oh, no, that's what I was thinking about when I decided to fire Comey. And, that is incredible, too. The third thing I think was bizarre and incredible about the Holt interview was that he admitted that he had talked three times to Mr. Comey about whether he personally was under investigation. And it was that was followed by Lawrence Tribe of Harvard Law School, who's probably the most distinguished lawyer in the country today, saying that that is obstruction of justice and that that is a federal crime and that should be prosecuted. And when you think about it, here is a man who is considering whether to renew the contract, essentially, or to continue the FBI director, asking whether I'm under investigation, obviously as a condition to whether he was going to be continued or not. And, I mean, I don't think you can find a more blatant example of someone interfering with the administration of justice or with the investigation. He should not have gone anywhere near talking to Comey with respect to the investigation of himself and of his campaign and of the Russian possible tampering with the voting.
Sean, so what did you make of the president's interview last night with NBC? And obviously, Mike Prettl here has indicated some issues that he's had with him. What was your impression and what is your sense about this White House in terms of where they came from? Because it's very clear that the emphasis was certainly on Hillary Clinton's scandal before then we had the statements last night. What was your impression?
I don't think that he's a conditioned speaker under these conditions. I think that he's, at this point, he's going and saying essentially what he's advised to say. I don't think that, for example, if he was going to fire Comey for the email, then it should have been done in January. So it's hard to say what exactly is going on behind closed doors. I will say, however, that I do believe that he thinks that the investigation should continue to its end, like I've said before. In this day and age, I don't think that he thinks he's going to get away with anything, where maybe in the Nixon days it may have been possible, but not today. So I don't think I've yet to see him really be that convincing as far as being on interviews yet. I don't think he was very clear and clear enough for what the American people wanted to hear, including myself.
Well, what didn't you hear from him?
Exactly what happened. Why was there a wait? Why wasn't it done in January? If it was going to be done, it should have been done in January, not now.
So, and what about this issue about meeting with Comey? There was a dinner, apparently two phone calls, all of which indicates that he inquired or was told that he was not being investigated. Right. Because I'm reminded of the meeting in the tarmac between former President Clinton and the Attorney General Loretta Lynch over the email stuff. And now both of them denied that they had talked about it. You can make your own judgment. But what do you make of that?
You know, it's until the investigation is completed and everything comes to light, it's really hard to say. I mean, opinions are another thing, but what actually happened? Like, for example, on that plane, who can? For all I know, they talked about their grandchildren.
Right. You know? But and here you have the president saying, "Well, yeah, but I did talk about this." I mean, which was much more specific. I mean, it just seemed. I mean, would you have done something like that? I mean, would you have talked to some? I mean, if you were sitting in that position,
I would have spoken as little as possible. until I knew exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think a strong plan has been put into place regarding this. I have to concede that this has not been handled that well. I must admit that.
Michael Laughlin, political science professor, you've been looking at this. Obviously, there are echoes of we are all making comparisons to the Nixon administration and that kind of thing. We may not be quite there yet because there were things that happened inside the Oval Office, which finally did in the President of the United States. What do you make of this from a historical point of view? Where are we here?
I think it's very much in the realm of a constitutional crisis. If we think about what constitutional government, anchored into the interview, apparently New York Times reported that Trump really was pleading with Comey about loyalty, right? That you must be loyal to me as president. And that brings into the context the whole question of constitutional government. What constitutional government is government by the law, not by dictate. And what we have here is a situation where the even though Trump, in the letter of the law, says he has the authority to fire an FBI director, the spirit of the law is, I mean, the reason why you give the FBI director a 10-year term is so that that institution has independence from precisely this kind of demand of loyalty to the emperor, to the king, to the dictator, right? Rather than respect for the independence of the FBI to hold other government officials accountable, whether it's a president or members of Congress and the like. So the real threat here is that with to the extent that, that the Republican Party, I mean, I put the Republican Party on the line here, to the extent that the Republican Party allows this president to continue to abuse his position as president, they are threatening the whole dynamic of constitutional government. This president ought to be impeached right now. He has clearly lied on numerous occasions. He's abused his power. And the Republican Party leadership, Mitch McConnell and Ryan, right, they're culpable in this allowance of a dynamic that leads us away from accountable government here. And this is reflective of certainly what Richard Nixon tried to get away with. I would say what Ronald Reagan tried to get away with. And I have to disagree with the comment that somehow Trump is really wants to see this investigation. Clearly, he does not. The whole effort is to close the door on this investigation. He may misunderstand the dynamics of the FBI because the investigation may indeed go forward, but it'll be in spite of Trump's wish to shut the door.
Sean, what about this idea about does he want this investigation to go on or not? I mean, he's often said that he thought it was made up.
His only way at this point is to appoint a credible, non-partisan as possible person to head up this investigation and continue it to a fruition, as I said before. Otherwise, if it's continuing to be tries to be swept under the rug, then how can I disagree with what he just said? The proof is going to be what happens in the next few weeks.
Michelle, I want to turn to you because what do you make of the Republican response to this? I mean, as I mentioned a moment ago, that we had the majority leader, Mitch McConnell, saying they did not see at this point that there was a need for either a special prosecutor or an independent panel. He was confident, I guess, in the congressional committees as well as the FBI. Senator John McCain, though, he said, I have long called for a special congressional committee to investigate Russia's interference. The president's decision to remove the FBI director only confirms the need and urgency for such a committee. And then you have a number of other Republicans. This Senator Richard Burr, chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, says he's troubled by the timing, and he's found Comey to be a public servant of the highest order. What do you see going on in terms of the Republican response?
Oh, gosh, there's a lot of points there.
Yeah.
Well, I think right now, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to a special committee being formed because I think, again, to reiterate what Sean said, it needs to happen or the Trump administration is not going to be able to move forward because it's just cast such a huge shadow already within just 100 days or so. But at the same time, I think the investigation will go on because when you appoint a new director, the investigation doesn't just die. They don't stop collecting the data because someone else got the job. So it's going to keep going. And if we do go in the direction of someone that's moderate, I think that will help appease both sides to, you know, someone being impartial or objective. I personally would like to see, we've had a lot of attorneys in this position, I'd like to see somebody with some experience in actually in investigatory experience so that they can give the information over to the DOG or DOJ, which is what Comey should have done in the first place. And he did not. He went ahead and held that press conference. He listed all these charges that Hillary allegedly committed and then didn't follow through with anything. Well, of course he can't because that's not his job. His job is not to prosecute. His job was to investigate. And I think he took advantage of that limelight and the power that he had at the moment by being able to control and influence things. So I think he definitely should have been dismissed on at least that regard because he did, you know, go outside of the scope of his job description. So I agree with some of the points that were in that letter that were made. He probably should have been dismissed in January if he was going to be dismissed at all. Because of the, you know, with the Hillary Clinton emails and, you know, the Russia thing is not going to go away. It's not. You know, I don't think either party is going to let it. So at this point, I would say we don't need a special prosecution or any kind of panel prosecutor until we get the new appointee to the head of the FBI. And then it should follow you know, from there.
Let me follow up with that, because one of the observations we made is that if there isn't, for instance, a special prosecutor, and again, that would depend upon who that was, right? That's mm-hmm. one. But the FBI, as you indicate, they don't prosecute. They just simply report back. So it will then fall into the lap of either Jeff Sessions, who's said he's recused himself, although he was involved with the firing, apparently, or Rod Rosenstein. And so then the question becomes, how much confidence is there in the Justice Department that they carry out a prosecution after the FBI hands over the materials? I mean, and just from an optics point of view, I mean,
right? I understand that, but yeah, they also know what the public. They have been hounded since day one, and the Democrats have been after this administration since day one. I mean, we even saw that locally with our Attorney General Frosch going after and getting, you know, all these, you know, additional powers to be able to sue the administration way back in February. I mean, so this has been on their agenda from day one. So they know that. Everyone is out to get this administration. So I think they're going to, from now, they're going to be on their P's and Q's. You know, and if they need to appoint someone specifically for this, then I think, you know, they should. But Sessions, as far as recusing himself, that was probably the best thing. I mean, a lot of these guys do have experience in administration where Trump doesn't. I think that's his biggest downfall. He's used to delegating and being a boss, for lack of a better term. He doesn't have any public administration experience, not even any theory classes, I don't think, under his belt. And there are certain things that go with that, including boundaries and, you know, like talking to Comey ahead of time. That should have never happened. I'm sorry, I'll stop there. You looks like you have something to say. I could go on.
I think that the problem is that we face both a question of the actual carrying out of investigations and a political question of the legitimacy of how we, the citizens, view what's going on in our government. And I think the Department of Justice has been compromised. The FBI now has been compromised. So the likelihood of getting someone in there that is going to be perceived by we, the public, as independent is highly doubtful. I mean, Donald Trump has not shown any discipline in being able to appreciate that.
So what would you do? I mean, would you get rid of everyone?
No. What you do is you get a special prosecutor, somebody that is completely independent of these compromised institutions, these compromised governmental institutions. So we, the public, right, can have confidence, right, in what that independent prosecutor does. So because however the FBI reports, whether they find evidence or they don't find evidence, who is going to believe that at this point in time when Donald Trump has pulled the rug out from a trusted FBI director within the FBI itself?
I agree with what Michael's saying, and I mean, I think it is a constitutional crisis, and unfortunately, we've created a problem for ourselves because after the debacle of the Clinton investigation and impeachment, they sunsetted the special prosecutor law, so we don't have
an independent counsel.
We don't have a statute for independent counsel at this point, but still, the logic or the process could be followed today by the, you know, if Congress would go along with it. I mean, as I recall, the process was that you go to the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and ask for them go to Merrick Garland, that was discussed last night, you know, and I mean, most people feel that he's reasonably objective, and not to him to do it himself, but to have him and perhaps in consultation with the Chief Justice select someone who is above the fray to be a special prosecutor. But I think you have to do that. I don't think there's any choice. And actually, the New York Times yesterday wrote a letter to Rod Rosenstein, said, now you have no choice, Mr. Rosenstein. You have to spin this off. Candidly, and not to get into it, I've never met Rod Rosenstein, although I practiced law in Maryland for 45 years. He's universally respected. And I sat down this morning and read his letter to about this thing. And I frankly agree with him with everything he said. He didn't say we should fire this guy. He says that he thought that the Comey breached the normal protocol, which was the same feeling I had when I heard him give the speech back last summer, you know. But at the same time, I think he was perfectly sincere. I thought he felt he was in a dilemma, which he was, because the committees were investigating Clinton emails and that sort of thing. So I think he did what he thought was right at the time. I think everybody feels it was a major blunder, and politically it turned out to be a huge blunder. But I mean, I still trust Rosenstein. I think he probably would be fair if it came back to his lap But I don't think that, as Mike says, I think he's been compromised to the point that nobody would believe it on either side. So
let me raise an issue about the independent counsel, or in this case, it would be a special prosecutor. Because it is, as a matter of fact, they had a special prosecutor during Watergate, and there was no. One of the big flaws in that independent counsel was revealed in 1998 when Ken Starr seemed to go on and on pursue and collect one scandal after another. So if you appointed a special prosecutor, so he starts out with Russia, where does he go? Does he go, then does he accumulate, for instance, well, business interests or other issues that they come about? And on the one hand, you're right, that it, certainly some kind of independent prosecutor of some kind would be good. On the other hand, you do risk this thing mushrooming. And,
Don,
and if I were sitting in the White House,
you're going to have that even with the Senate committee. I mean, they've already talked last night about the Senate committee now should get into the firing of Comey, you know. So, you don't have good options.
We have the problem, again, of trying to salvage constitutional government. Yeah. I mean, that is really what is at issue here, particularly for we, the citizens. We need to have trust in our government, and presently, all of what this dynamic is undermining our ability to have trust in government.
I mean, Ken Starr was a poor choice, you could pick somebody who you could trust.
I know the Bushes complained about the special prosecutor that was in Iran-Contra as well.
Go ahead, Sean. To a certain point, I don't think all this started with the Trump administration. Like I said, we started in the summertime. How difficult would it have been? I mean, it was an email server. If they really wanted to find the truth, they would have found it. See, in today's day and age, you can't...
John, what people are overlooking is the fact that when that happened, when Comey made those statements last summer, Trump not only embraced it, he said he didn't go far enough. He felt that they should have thrown the book at Hillary. Hillary should go to jail.
If she committed those alleged crimes,
but he didn't say that Comey was out of line in making the statements that he did. He said Comey should have taken it a step or two further. So, Trump was criticizing for something he praised, and he.
I think if some solid ending would have come about. That's what we're going to have to do to solve this. No, because it seems like this is a huge conversation about distrust on your side, on our side. If we can get some solid endings to these things, if it ever can happen, again, this sells tickets. You know, if we can get these things taken care of to an end point, we can move forward. If we don't, we will never move forward.
Well, let me say, it is in the Republican Party's hands.
Absolutely, it is.
And the fact that they are slow walking this, the fact that it's thundering silence coming from the leadership, Mitch McConnell and Ryan, tells us a lot about what their priorities are. The Republican Party has a policy agenda that they want to work through. And their deal has been that they all know the story. Mm-hmm. They want to work with Trump. If they can't, they can hang with Trump to get their policy agenda through tax cuts, remove Obamacare, roll back the New Deal. That's their policy agenda.
But Mike, they could get that with a president, Mike Pence.
But there's going to be a huge delay before doing anything.
The political problem they face is the cratering now of the Trump administration. If you look at the polls, and they're watching the polls, he's down at 36%.
Which polls, though?
Public opinion polls.
Public opinion polls. And it's now the polling in terms of what may be happening in the 2018 elections. The midterm elections are now looking very bad for the Republican Party. Mm. And they have to weigh whether they can weather this particular dynamic, right? So that if they can push through these other agendas, then they'd be more than willing to dump Trump. But presently, they still, I mean, I think what that tells us about from Ryan and McConnell is they still think that they can weather this particular thing. So we'll get a new FBI director. That'll be fine. We can put off this investigation. Right? They're going to fight the special prosecutor or an independent counsel because that would highlight, that would In their view, I think at this point, they see that as worsening their political chances rather than improving them.
Michelle, we'll turn to you. In terms of polls, I've seen one is in the high 30s, although a lot of others are like in the low 40s. But go ahead. You want to sound like you want to respond.
Right. No, well, I was just interested because we hear a lot about this data that's collected with polls, but who's being polled? Who are you asking to get that information on his favorability? So. And even just public opinion polls, where did they come from? Was it, you know, you got to know the source. But I don't think the Republican Party is going to be in as much dire straits come this midterm election than you guys would like to think. Because there's still a lot of momentum, at least here locally, behind our elected officials now. So, and there's still a lot, the people that got Trump where he is are still, they see it as prosecution and unfairly so. So they're still going to turn out. So I think the numbers are going to be there for our party this midterm. So I don't think that's going to be an issue.
Especially if we can put this issue to bed and get it cleared up once.
Absolutely.
If they
Absolutely.
Don't, if the Republicans duck and dodge and try to act like Muhammad Ali, we're going to look like
I don't think that's going to happen.
But there's no way they can put it to rest because there are just too many pieces. I mean, yesterday, again, Manafort, this whole Manafort thing is blown up, and it's going to be a huge scandal, the money that he was receiving from the Russians.
I'm going to ask it, Sean. So as a matter of fact, what are the Trump supporters saying? I mean, back there was a piece actually on Morning Edition in which there was a number of people, Trump supporters, who said, we're tired of this. We think the president did the right thing. Russia's thing should go away. What about that core support? I mean, does it have any effect at all?
I think frankly, we as a party, there were so many candidates. I was for Ted Cruz. But we had to bound together and go for the guy that was chosen. So we want to hear the best about the person that represents us as a party. But it's a matter of we truly honestly think that if his agenda is pushed through, that our country will go in a better direction, not in a fragmented state. And I think that, like, to go back to what you were saying, if it's never going to be put together, we just don't throw start just. Do an impeachment, get him out of there, because then we still have the same problem with a different. Now a person has to learn another job. We've got to, unless this can be proven that something was done, then we need to keep moving forward as a country, not just as Republicans or Democrats. Stick behind us, the person that the American people elected, and until something is proven that was maliciously done, we've got to assume that it was not. But that's why it's so important that this investigation continue with most likely a moderate, possibly, like I was saying, a Merrick Garland, a moderate Democrat to head these things up.
Well, I have to make predictions, but I yes. believe that impeachment of the president is going to be the main issue in the 2018 election. And I think it's going to be I don't see the thing going away.
You're hearing Democrats say that they are going to make this?
I hear people
saying
January. Impeachment as an issue?
October.
I think there is a substantial chance that the Democrats will take back the House. Okay, the normal when the same party controls the House and both parts of Congress and the White House, it's normally 36 average votes shift from the party in power. Now this is a strange year, but it will be. It should be. I mean, if in fact the Democrats take control of the House. Then there's going to be articles of impeachment on the desk of the Speaker the first day.
And then it'll falter in the Senate.
Well, it may or may not.
I mean, you're not going to get the...
It didn't falter with Nixon, and I think this is stronger.
Because you need two-thirds. I mean,
I think this is stronger than Nixon, though. I really think there's more there. I mean, look, Russia used to be the bad guys for all the Republicans. I hated Russia. But now, somehow it's not a big deal anymore. Yeah.
So in terms of... Because it seems to me that impeachment... is a political process. Impeachment is not a legal process. Right. It is a political process. And I'll show this to you, Sean. Given that, I mean, there would have to be something remarkably to happen remarkable right. for Republicans to finally say, okay, I'm done. And I would assume that it would have to produce approval ratings far below what we're looking at now for Trump. In the public opinion polls, I mean, it's a political process. It's not some legal thing, right?
Yeah, it's not going to happen. He's not going to be impeached unless it's proven that he actually had something, that he had his hands holding hands with Putin to get elected and hurt Hillary's campaign. It's not going to happen.
Well, he said in the last few days he has no investments in Russia. Okay, if they get his tax returns and it shows that he's got millions of dollars tied up in
Russia. Well, in that case, then we...
That's what I'm saying. You say it has to be something strong. Well, that's strong. If we have a special prosecutor, they're going to get the tax records. Okay.
But I think a colleague here is correct, though. So long as Republican leadership believes that they're better with Trump than without...
They're going to try.
They're going to stonewall. They're going to slow walk this because they all... I mean, these guys are sophisticated folks. They understand what's going on in the FBI. They understand what's going on with the tax. I mean, clearly the Trump administration is engaged in a cover-up. There's no question about that.
Cover-up is a little strong.
It is absolutely... No. It's absolutely... Well, then why? Why would Trump be so interested in putting aside this? I mean, he's not interested in this investigation. He's doing everything, including firing the FBI director
to get out of it.
If he were clean, if he were actually clean, why wouldn't he say, please, here are all the documents. I want everybody to voluntarily testify in open hearings, and I want the Comey, I want them to investigate quite seriously. I want it sped up. Why is the Republican leadership not engaged in that as well?
Is his staff going, oh, my God, every time Trump tweets something or says something, now I've got to fix this? Yes, they are. Yeah. But I will say Trump, I said it before, he was a businessman. Does he have an ego? Yes, he does. He's used to getting the best people around him to pull off his agenda and get it done. That's what he's used to. That's not how the government works, really. And he doesn't see it that way. He still thinks there, you know, people need to do what he says, and when he says yes or no, that should be the end of the discussion.
He doesn't take advice from anybody.
He should take a little more. I would say. I'm not going to say he doesn't take the advisement of those around him, or there'd be a lot more going, oh my gosh. But I don't think he's trying to cover it up. I think he just wants it gone because he said what he said and it should be done. He doesn't realize the process that's involved. The leadership does. They're walking him through it. You call it slow walking, but it is a process.
Oh, right, right. Investigation, by the way, investigations do take a long time, which probably drives him crazy. Unfair. But Sean, how much of all of this is really Donald Trump in terms of his character and who he is, as opposed to the Republican Party?
If I might be so bold, instead of focusing on conspiracy theories, what I would take it at face value, maybe he just felt that Comey wasn't getting the job done. Maybe that's why he was fired.
He admitted it last night in the interview that was not the case.
Well, I don't think that's what – I think he wanted to be make it whitewashed a little bit, but I think behind the scenes he felt as though he wasn't getting the job done.
He said he wanted loyalty from Comey, and when he didn't get that, right, he was upset with the Russian investigation. I mean, it was clearly an interview with Holt.
To be clear, Trump didn't say he wanted loyalty. He asked about whether or not, right? Okay, whether or not that he was being investigated. We only hear now from sources that Comey says that he was looking for loyalty,
assuming the New York Times report is accurate.
Right, we got to kind of figure that one out.
But I think that it's... I mean, the evidence would appear to be that the real reason for the Comey firing is because of the Russian investigation, not because there was some general notion that Comey was doing a bad job.
But he clearly, I mean, if you read the letter, that's the great thing about it is that he put those details in there of why he made his recommendation. There are things that he did that he should not have done. So he should have been held accountable. Unfortunately, Trump's timing, and because it was Trump that did it, I think they put more focus on the Russian thing. Because that's not going away. The next FBI investigator is going to investigate it. It's not going to go away.
What specific thing did Comey do that Trump was so upset about then?
Well, if you look at the letter that Rosenstein wrote, he talked about how he mishandled the investigations that he was doing
claiming that he was upset about how the FBI treated Hillary Clinton during the campaign. Are you really claiming that?
He violated his job description and what he was supposed to do. So he was holding him accountable. Was he upset? No, because April 28th. Of course, he comes out I'm sorry. Of course, he was excited about that because he came out and said all these alleged things about Hillary a week before the campaign.
But Trump was in favor of that.
He wasn't president then. So yes, it's going to help his campaign.
That is not credible to think that Trump sincerely believed that she was mistreated during the campaign. He was celebrating it, and he was happy that the FBI was pouring out its guts on Hillary Clinton. So that's not credible. That doesn't make any sense. We'll soon find out.
So let me pull this back in to wrap up this particular segment, and I'll just go around. So I'll start with our Democratic friend here, Mike Prettl. So where do you think this Russian issue goes, and particularly the firing of Comey? What's the outfall, do you think?
Well, no, I think it's going to go on and on and on, and I think there are all sorts of aspects of it that now are going to be uncovered, including the Manafort thing and the other contacts with Russia and whatever. And, I mean, I think there's no option but for Rosenstein or somebody to appoint a special prosecutor to investigate further. And I think it's going to run up all the way to the next election, and I hope that it will be a major factor in the next election.
Michael Laughlin, what's the upshot?
I think that watch the polls, frankly. I mean, I think there's a political calculation going on, and if the polls can continue to tank in a serious way, then the move perhaps may go to an independent counsel.
Sean Bradley?
Again, I'm just going to reiterate, some of the things these gentlemen have said today is correct. We need to, this can't be made to go away, and it will not go away. The American people deserve better than to be kept in the dark. And if as a Republican, this may sound heretical, if he is behind covering up an investigation, definitely something needs to happen, and quickly. The only way to redeem this administration is to, and if it's possible, bring this to fruition, hire the right investigating committee or person, and get it done and move on as a country instead of focusing on the negative, because we have enough problems as it is.
And Michelle?
Well, I agree totally. My background is a regulator and an administrator, and I believe in chain of command, and I believe in accountability utmost. So I think we do need to find these answers. Is it going to satisfy? No, because something else will come up that the other side doesn't like. There's always going to be something. But this particular one, I do agree, it needs to be cleared. I'm not opposed to, having this special prosecution. I hope it doesn't get that far, but these gentlemen are convincing me that if the rest of the citizens are not going to accept what is found once the new director is appointed, then you know what? Let's go to the next step. Let's get a special independent prosecutor and get to the bottom of it, and then move on from there. But I would like to at least have the possibility of being able to move on from there and not constantly looking over our shoulder for the next attack and always being on the defensive for the next 4 to 8 years. Because nothing is going to help the country if we're constantly at battle, constantly.
And we've been, of course, speaking about the importance of the firing of James Comey, the now former head of the FBI. And we're going to take a break here. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk with our Republican folks about the future of the Republican Party, where it stands, and all the factions that seem to have been developed, and certainly Sean Bradley, who's been now promoted, as it were, to president of the Republican
That's
club. And it's you have your hands full, but you sound like you indicated a moment ago that you have a full house. So that ought to be interesting. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. This has been Delmarva Day. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Stephanie Fowler.
And this is Tony Russo.
And this week on So What's Your Story, we're going to be talking with award-winning bluegrass musician and songwriter Nate Clendenin.
Join us Saturdays, 1 p.m. following This American Life on WSDL, Rhythm and News. Stephanie, that's Rhythm and News.
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't.
This is Tom Pittman. I hope you can join us this Friday at 8 for the Mother's Day edition of Vintage Country. With just one or two exceptions, we've got all new stuff that we did not play last week. There's a couple we just have to play every year, and we'll do those as well here on WSDL.
Hi, this is Steve Martin, the host of Unreal Bluegrass. Each week we'll bring you a wide range of bluegrass from the innovative artists of today to the traditional pickers from yesteryear. All this in interviews with players from all walks of life. That's 3 hours of Unreal Bluegrass every Sunday at 7 p.m. on WSDL 90.7 FM, Rhythm and News.
And welcome back to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. We want to turn our attention now to the Republican Party in the age of Donald Trump. The president was hardly a traditional candidate. He brought with him a populist message that grabbed the attention of many a Republican, beating back traditional candidates in the race. Over the last decade, we've seen a transformation of the GOP from the Reagan era to the Gingrich takeover of Congress to the rise of the Tea Party. But fractures within the Republican Party have made it even more difficult sometimes to pass fundamental GOP measures. For instance, a health care bill stumbled even as it made it out of the House of Representatives. A temporary spending bill found Democrats crowing about what they got. So this morning we want to continue our conversation. Sean Bradley, he's president of the Republican Club, and also Michelle Bradley, who is with the Greater Wicomico Women's Republican Club. So let me ask you a fundamental question as I look at politics. Sean, is there such a thing as Trumpism? I mean, is that a real thing, or how do you see it?
We have a commander in chief who is a no nonsense man of business. He was running for election. He's not a typical politician. He's going to be taken. He's running the government as though he would run a business, like a boss. And I think in a lot of ways, especially people watch as casual watchers of the news, look at that as a little odd. Because if I'm an outsider and I'm bossing around a lifelong politician, they may or may not want to work with me, Republican or not, with him. I mean, so he's still very much new, and he knows what he wants to do. He has a very strong team, and we'll get it done. It just needs more of a polished act. We need to start working on getting some of these controversies out of the way, which is, fouling up the machine.
Because I mean, one of the things that's right, I mean, the big departure, obviously there are probably others, but the big departure, it seemed to me, when Trump was campaigning was trade. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Republican Party was the free trade party. They were key, as a matter of fact, in getting NAFTA passed. I mean, most Democrats in the House and the Senate were not in favor of necessarily of that. But he got it. But then President Bill Clinton got it through. He seems to speak to what has been classified as working class folks. Sure. Right. And particularly white working class folks who feel like they've been left behind. Is there something particular? Is there a set of issues, for instance, that he represents? I mean, in foreign policy, he seems to be pulled back from, say, George W. Bush's idea of spreading democracy, which was one of the key tenets in the Middle East. I mean, are there a set of issues that define that movement?
There is a set of issues exactly, and that is that he just like a lot of other Republicans, we need to remember where our money comes from. If we continue to raise the tax rates on American corporations, thus driving them to other nations, where does our jobs go? And then on the other hand, where do our taxes come from? We have to. The Republican Party believes, especially now, in building business, and it's not to hurt the working person. You know, Republicans aren't mustache twisting. You know, robber barons. We're here to build business to keep jobs in America, so we can have the income. How does a government operate? It operates on revenue, on taxes. If you drive an industry from our country, where is these jobs going to go? So, you know, because I keep hearing the other side saying, you know, entitlements, programs. How are we going to pay for them without the tax revenue to do it? Because we've driven out all of our, you know, industry. Trump wants us to be a nation, an industrial nation again, to rebuild as a instead of always having to import items. We want to be an exporter. We need to work with China as far as them stopping, you know, our products from being brought into their country. But they can have all the import. They can bring all the things they want to our country. That's what Trump is trying to change, and I think that's a great start.
Michelle, do you think differ from what has been traditional leadership by the Republican Party? Because the Republican Party really pushed back when it came to Donald Trump, and in particular, free trade, for example. Most of the folks around there were all for free trade, as one example, or this sort of realism, I guess, for lack of a better word, in terms of foreign policy. Suddenly, we're talking very friendly about, for instance, the Russians. That has not necessarily been a traditional Republican position. Is there a divide there between what he has brought to the party and what the party has been?
Yes. Well, I think, yes. There was some pushback initially because, of course, we have our establishment just like the Democrats have their establishment. We had our candidates picked out who represented our conservative values and, you know, where we wanted to go with our agenda. And then all of a sudden, here comes Trump. And he was like a storm. He just like went through very quickly and you know, gathered so much emotion and so much support from, like you said earlier, the working class. And that was a voice that hadn't been heard of. And when the Make America Great Again came about, which is a great slogan, and it gets made fun of a lot, but we had been very apologetic for being Americans for so long over the past 8 years. And why shouldn't we be proud? Why shouldn't we be proud to be Americans? We do give so much globally. Doesn't mean we have to be globalists. We should take pride in what we're doing, support our citizens first, make sure our economy is growing. We have jobs and we can take care of our own first. And we've been the police of the world. We've been the philanthropers of the world. And I think, you know, that movement finally said, make America great again. They latched onto it because they still had pride in their jobs and going to work, pride in our military and our armed forces. And we had been taught to be shameful and to apologize for that for so long. So there's, you know, the working class, and then you have our establishment, which is more administrative. And I hate to use the word intellectual because that's not the comparison I'm making. But, you know, they already had their plan worked out. And when Trump came along and threw a wrench in that, they didn't know what to do because this was our chance, you know, to get back. We still ended up getting back. We have the trifecta, which is great. But we do have Trump, who is a very, you know, like Sean was saying, he's new, he's unpolished. Sometimes that can be a good thing when you're starting from scratch. But other times, as we've seen, it can lead into, you know, these little controversies.
Following that, I can guarantee you one thing under a Trump, and which is I think is wonderful, is that we have underfunded VA hospitals, yet the Obama administration was giving billions to Iraq, who would see us burn. Frankly, why?
And so did Bush, by the way.
Yeah, well, right. Yeah, I think that
the whole
Trump,
yeah,
is this, that those things, hopefully. Now, hopefully it's not a big smoke and mirror show. And it can always be because, again, the more dramatic somebody is, the more viewers you're going to have, the more money comes in. I get mm-hmm. that. But I'm getting the feeling that with his administration, hopefully lasting all 8 years, that we will be at a position again that focuses on America. We are not the United States of the world. We're the United States of America. We are not globalists, as hard as the previous administrations tried to make that happen.
Let me ask you, Sean, because you're deeply involved with Republican politics. Mm-hmm. Are there various factions within the Republican Party, differences? You know, we saw, for instance, in 2009, 2010, the rise of the Tea Party, which seemed to come out of nowhere and was separated in some fashion or another, at least it seemed to me, from what had been traditional Republican policy. Are there factions? What are you seeing?
I'm glad you brought that up because I think that I'll give you an example. What I saw a month or so again was Congressman Harris had a town hall near Easton. I was there, and I saw a faction that I saw four young men, ROTC men, saying the Pledge of Allegiance, being booed and jeered. Saying the Pledge of Allegiance just to, I guess, go against whatever Harris was going to say, which they weren't there to listen to. And I think that may have been retaliation for how the Tea Party treated Democratic candidates back a few years ago. The point is that you're going to have extreme right-wing conservatives. You're going to have extreme left-wing, you know, liberal or globalists, if you will, is that, you know, it's a time for unity between we need to move forward as a party. But I'm finding that, you know, I find more Republicans are moderate, I think, than your hardcore right wing guys. Like, now you're always going to have them, you know, guns, God, and government type Republican, and that's fine. But I think they're the minority. By far, I think you're going to find Republicans generally are a pretty straightforward, mellow, you know, middle of the road. We want to see America grow. We want to see jobs grow. We don't necessarily we don't hate immigrants like you might find in some cases. We just want it legal. We just want it lawful. We want it to be the concept. We want to make sure that immigration is open, as long as they're given a chance to make it legal, so they don't have to live a horrible life in the dark or chasing or running from authorities. That's a big misconception. Now, some may feel, and again, the minority would say, no, we just want to close our borders and be a, you know, and that can't be either. You know, I think majority of our party is the country was built on immigration. It was built on business. And that's the way we operate, and that's the way we believe. And I think you'll find that that's it's a rare find. You'll find somebody, you know, screaming about far-right issues, if that answers your question.
Well, let me say this. When I looked at, for instance, the healthcare debate, because the one that was so I found that interesting is it seemed to reveal some at least some kind of division, because you had the Freedom Caucus, which I guess grows out of the Tea Party, and they have pretty strong demands in terms of what they wanted out of the healthcare bill, and the big fear was if we gave this to the Freedom Caucus, then we're going to lose our moderates, you know, on the other side, and of course there's a whole big question obviously going to the Senate. And that seemed to symbolize, at least for me, as I was looking at it, that there is, I don't know whether it's two wings, but there's a real separation between what, for instance, somebody in the Freedom Caucus or the Tea Party folks want, say out of an issue, say the healthcare in this particular case, and what might be considered moderates, many, I guess, who certainly sit in seats that might be swing seats. I mean, what does that represent, do you think, the kind of division that we're seeing within your party?
Well, I do believe we have seen that, especially when it comes to the Health Care Act that you pointed out. We actually had Melanie Clark come in from the Heritage Action Group to talk to us specifically about the first go around when they were trying to appeal and it didn't go through. But and they are a very conservative right wing group. And they came down to talk to us about holding even Andy Harris accountable and making sure that, you know, because, of course, a lot of them did get voted on the repeal. You know, they promised repeal, and how many times they voted on it and it didn't get done. So there's a lot of people are upset about that. Some people are not so. So you have, you know, those two factions, if you will, if that's what you want to call them. But I think they have been coming together to kind of work on it, to find a middle road to see what will make everyone happy. And I think that is probably the difference between the two parties from what I've seen. Because I do have, you know, I still have a few friends that haven't, you know, unfriended me that are Democrats.
But you need a few.
Yeah. But their factions are way more extreme than ours. You know, we have our moderates and our right wing, but we can all come together on some common ground and work through that. When he mentioned Andy Harris's town hall in Y Mills, it was at Chesapeake College, and we know people. It was packed. They were there ahead of time. They are a well-oiled machine, and we need to be just as organized as they are. We know people, and we still had to sit up in the balcony, and we're way outnumbered. It was at capacity, and this was, I think, I might let Sean talk about this earlier because he actually coined it. It's a hybrid. They, you know, their way left is just not just aggressive, but just mean. And I don't see that in our party. I mean, they have their viewpoints and they want to hold people accountable. They're very vocal about it, but not as vicious as the factions that I've seen on the left. So I'm grateful for that.
We want affordable health care for everybody. And I think, you know, the other administration had great intentions, but it became that we want to make it so it's affordable for all to get and not fine them on their taxes if they can't afford it. I know for a fact I'm lucky that I'm covered, but for a while there it was literally almost unaffordable. In the position I had at the time, I was like, "Well, how much are the benefits here? It's how much a paycheck? When is this?" And of course, they always wanted to say, "Well, don't blame us, blame you know." And it's not a matter of blame; it's fixing it so because again, the Republicans want everybody to have health care too.
Let me ask you this, Sean. It seems to me that in the health care debate, mm-hmm. the ground has shifted. That is that before the Affordable Care Act and Obama came along, right? That okay, well, you could have health care. You might not have health care. It depends on whether or not you could afford it. And the market kind of responded with a whole set of things which were certainly not certainly didn't make people happy, right? I mean, you know, with its high deductibles and so on and so forth. The thing that struck me about the Affordable Care Act is that once it got stuck into the ground, not only did you have obviously the institutions and so on, the exchanges, but it changed the debate. Now the debate is about how do we provide health care to everybody? I remember in the mid-1990s when Hillary Clinton was pushing it, and the Republican Party response was, there's not a problem. We don't need to do anything. Now the Republican Party is, at least and from my view, is being forced into this idea of saying, we've got to figure out how to provide this because we're going to eliminate this other program, and we got to make sure that the people on the program don't get lost in the shuffle.
Right. People still want what the American people still want what they were promised. That's the issue. People are yelling for it. There's extremists calling for the single payer system, which would make doctors employees of the government. People are not gonna. They didn't get exactly what they wanted, but they were promised. And by God, they want to be covered. I mean, it's not a right because it's a service. But at the same time, the Republicans have to say, okay, well, we have to somehow honor the promise this other administration made, because you have to give the people what they want.
It does seem to me, though, that it's edged towards being a right. I mean, I saw a Republican congressional member who said it was not a right and got booed, and I suspect that we got booed, and those weren't all Democrats who were booing, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a popular statement. You know, it's not.
Yeah, it seems to me that whole agenda. But it seems to me that there are things, though, but moving beyond health care, you've got, for instance, infrastructure. We'll see where that goes, although I have a question about whether the Freedom Caucus will go along with that. Issues like that, tax cuts, obviously, they would. There's that as well. So, I mean, there are within the Republican Party are still common issues that it seems to me both sides will be able to come to agreement on inside the Republican Party.
Sure, we're always going to be about lowering taxes for the American worker and building business instead of shipping it outsourcing our business overseas. That's always going to be something. I'm hoping. I mean, on this, it's a no-brainer, you know, that this administration, just like any other Republican administration on any level, should be working towards. If there were, you know, that's just the way it is, and I don't think that'll ever go away. It's very important to keep that momentum working. We're not globalists. We are the United States of America. And not to forget it, and I think over the last 8 years that was forgotten. It was almost like she was saying, "Oh, it's embarrassing to say." One slang term I cannot stand is a term "America," because they're making fun of what I believe in. They're making a comedy act out of the greatest nation on earth. And I'm thinking, with hopefully Trump is able to, you know, submit a way of a view, a mindset of it being okay to be American again, not to be ashamed of our values. And that's what the Republican Party is all about. Whether it's on both sides, whether it be moderate or maybe like your Tea Party guys. That's what we want. It's I'm proud to be an American, and I'm proud to be a Republican, and that's what I'm focusing on. And I think that's what most Republicans are. I can't speak for Michelle, but I imagine she would say something similar.
So Michelle, where do you see, in the brief minute, I guess, that we have left, where do you see the Republican Party going? I mean, do you think it's in terms of its future and trying to And is it at all possible that there can be any kind of bipartisanship, given the kind of sharp division that we've seen?
Well, I think we have seen it kind of when you were just talking about the health care bill. They know that they have to give the people what they want because that's who voted them into their position. So I think there's going to be more working across the aisle. We've already reached out locally to do that. And I think that's where it has to start, locally. And then it will move out to the state and to national. But as far as our party goes, I think we've been told that we don't know how to govern now just because we haven't done it for so long. I don't think that's true. I don't think we've forgotten. But just that conversation has come up, I think, is a good one, because then to govern, we need to work across the aisle with both parties. And I think you're going to see that happen. I think a lot of these controversies hopefully will get resolved and the parties will learn to work together. I know there's just over the administration – there's been an extreme divide, so that may or may not happen. But I know locally and within the state, we've already seen that quite a bit. Actually, that gives me hope.
Actually, we'll have to have you back as we move into the gubernatorial thing next year. Going to be really, really interesting. But that for another time. We've been speaking with Sean Bradley. He's president of the Waycomico County Republican Club. Also, Michelle Bradley with the Greater Waycomico Republican Women Republican Club. And I appreciate you all being here, and we'll certainly definitely invite you back.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC14.org.